Reading from Sri Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami Pad, discussing the first division, second chapter, the 64 limbs of devotion. And now we're reviewing the 44 positive actions, which will help one become endeared to Krishna and attached to Krishna. So this is number 51. All endeavors should be performed for the sake of the delight of Krishna. This is, in this second edition, says, making full efforts for the Lord. So, whatever we do, what we should do with our full attention, undivided attention, an undivided heart. It's usually our heart that's divided with different people or different engagements. So he's saying here that, he's saying, tadarte, tadarte, kilacheshtitam. He says that all endeavors for the sake of the delight of Sri Krishna. So our actions, we should act in such a way that Krishna becomes delighted, becomes satisfied, happy. And it should be our full effort, giving it our best attempt. Sometimes people, they don't put their heart into it, or they may be working physically but their mind is not into it, or they may be thinking about their work and working but their heart is not into it. And they have phrases like that. Well, you're engaging in this activity but it doesn't seem that your heart is into it. You're just doing it mechanically. And everyone knows that when you apply your heart, when your heart is applied, the result is much deeper, much more successful for you and everyone else involved. So heart is important. So this is the meaning of full effort. All endeavors for the sake of the delight. Is you're making full efforts. So Krishna wants to see how much we're offering of ourselves to him. Because generally when they describe nishchita bhakti or steadiness in devotion, they say that first, a devotee becomes steady in the physical activities of his body. Steady, he becomes steady, he's regular, steady in offering physical activities of his body. His body is waking up every day at 4 o'clock, and his body is bathing every day, and his body is going to Mangalarti, and his body is doing so many things. But the mind is lagging way behind, somewhat separated. The first level of steadiness and devotion, or full effort, you can say, is to fully engage the physical body, to fully engage the physical body in activities to please Krishna. Then after that becomes somewhat regular and nishta, then later, and maybe much later, the verbal activities become steady, the speaking. Even our physical bodies may be engaged in Krishna's service, but we're talking for japa. We're cooking, we're in the kitchen, we're cooking for the Lord and trying to make some offering, but we're talking about the sports events or political events or social events, what is generally called gramya katha. So it's not really putting your full effort. This is not very delighting, not very satisfactory to the Lord to hear non-devotional topics. Gramya Katha. Krishna likes to hear Hari Katha, Radha Katha, Leela Katha. To hear about, he likes to hear his devotees glorifying him. So after some time one becomes steady in his verbal activities. He's always either chanting Hare Krishna mantra or he's speaking about the Lord. So the last faculty of the human being to come in line with the service of Krishna or to come in line with the pleasure of Krishna is the mentality, the mind. For example, our bodies engaged in cooking an offering for the deity, and we may even be chanting Hare Krishna. So the verbal aspect of the person is He's chanting the name, but still his mind is elsewhere. It's called inattentive japa. Body, tongue is saying Hare Krishna. Body's engaged in doing some practical service for the pleasure of Krishna, but the mind is elsewhere, distracted, sidetracked. So this is considered unsteadiness in the mind. And when these three come in line, when the bodily activities, the verbal activities, and the mental activities are all parallel, they're all connected with Krishna, then one comes to a stage what's called ruchi. We steady the body in Krishna's service, then we steady the speaking power and the eating power. The eating power and the speaking power, we steady that in Krishna's service. And finally we steady the mind. Steady as she goes. The boat of the mind becomes steady. And this is what is known as nishta. And it becomes deeper and deeper. And the steadiness becomes deeper as we increase our taste for Krishna. So as taste increases, and then we leave the platform of nishta and come to actual ruchi, platform of ruchi. And when we're actually tasting something from hearing about Krishna, when we hear about Krishna, then we're tasting something. Spiritual taste, spiritual pleasure, satisfaction. Then it's easy to fix the mind on Krishna. Because the taste increases our attraction. There's no taste, attraction wanes. When the taste comes, then the attraction increases. So that our mind can stay there. This experience I'm having with Krishna is very satisfying. So my mind likes to stay here. And of course the body is following the dictates of the mind. And then whenever you speak, you can savor that taste. When one is on platform of ruchi, taste for Krishna, bhakti, then he relishes that taste whenever he has a chance to hear or chant or serve Krishna. So then when one speaks, he finds, speaking Harikatha is also very satisfying. It's very, let's say, exciting. So then he wants to speak more and more and more. I remember once Gaur Govinda Swami was saying that, just keep me engaged. I want to preach. Just bring me to this engagement, that engagement. Don't stop. I'll preach in the morning, in the evening, afternoon. Take me here, take me there. My life is for preaching. My life is meant for preaching. And preaching is my life. So this is the experience of an advanced devotee, that he can't speak enough about Krishna. Of course, this is a symptom of Bhav. So this is number 51, all endeavors for the delight of Krishna. 52 is self-surrender in every respect. Surrendering to the Lord. This is a 52nd one, which is Sharanapati. Sharanapati, of course, means taking shelter or self-surrender in every respect. So we can each analyze ourselves how much we are surrendered, and in what respect are we surrendered? Are we surrendered to the culture of Krishna consciousness? Are we surrendered to the idea of Krishna consciousness? Are we surrendered to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness? Are we surrendered to the heart of Krishna consciousness? The heart, what is the heart? Because ultimately Krishna consciousness is the loving feeling that one actually has within his heart for the Lord, beyond the mechanical, beyond the philosophical, beyond the rules, beyond the regulations, is that the core feeling of the heart. Does one actually feel himself to be devoted or want to devote himself to the Lord? He actually feels it deep in the core of his heart. Yes. This is really my essence. This is really the essence and core of my being, is to act in a way favorably and pleasingly and loving mood towards the Lord. Because oftentimes we can fool ourselves. We think, yes, we're absorbed in the mechanics of Krishna consciousness, but there's no heart there. Prabhupada over and over again emphasized that we must perform devotional service with feeling. Even as Vaidhi sadhakas or beginners, we have to have the idea that I'm actually serving a person, that Krishna is a person, and he has feelings, he has likes and dislikes, and he can be pleased. He can be pleased. A human being, a living being, can be happy, he can be sad. He can be satisfied with us or dissatisfied with us. So Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the topmost person. So being that Supreme Person, he can be satisfied with us, and he can be dissatisfied. Dissatisfied means aparad, rad. Rad means satisfied, satisfaction. So if he's dissatisfied, or Krishna is dissatisfied with our actions, with our speaking, with our physical actions, our verbal speaking, our thinking, then that's an aparad. Nam aparad, seva aparad, vaishnava aparad, jiva aparad. So then Krishna is dissatisfied. So the objective of bhakti is to make the person happy, to satisfy the person, and the person is God. Person is our Ishtadev, our Ishta, Krishna. So then everything becomes very much deeper. It comes beyond the senses, beyond the mechanics, beyond the rules, beyond the so many things. Oftentimes people get swept up in enthusiasm. By the enthusiasm of some preacher, someone may take up Krishna consciousness, but actually they don't have the heart of a devotee. They don't actually have the devotional heart. And they don't last, they don't stay. Come and they do the show and make a display and exhibition. Look at me, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. But there's no depth, heart depth. So he's saying here that self-surrender in every respect. Surrender, we have to, it's layers and layers and layers of surrender. It's like endless. You never can get to the end of surrender. The ocean is unlimited, and the ocean of surrender is also unlimited. There's so many waves coming on the ocean, one after the other, wave after wave after wave. And similarly, for the devotee, so many waves of opportunity, so many waves of opportunity wash across our lives, wash across our minds, and they give us, each one of those waves of opportunity gives us a chance to surrender. Yes, will you surrender now? No, I'll go the other way. Will you surrender now? So this surrender is a moment-to-moment, hour-to-hour, day-to-day activity. Even you see that, and this, the degree of the surrender depends on the degree of the love. The greater the love, the greater the surrender. So the gopis are described in the Bhagavatam that, see, look at the surrender of the Braja gopis. Krishna was calling them. He would play his Vamshi or Murli and say, please come. I'm waiting for you. I left my house. I left my father, my mother. I left my brother. I left everyone. And I've run into the forest in the middle of the night to meet with you, to be with you, to associate with you. Now I'm calling you with my flute. Come, come. O Radha, come. O Lalita, come. Vishakha, please come. So you can see, they have a choice to come, to join Krishna in the forest for the rasa dance, or to remain at home. So whenever there's a choice, it means there's an opportunity to surrender. Surrender to one or surrender to the other. So then, in their lives, they always choose the Krishna option. They don't opt for anything else but Krishna. But they're showing, by that choice, that risk. They take a risk. The gopis take a risk. And it's a desperate decision that they make. They're risking everything because of their love for Krishna. So they take a decision, yes, we have to surrender. Krishna is calling us, and we can either stay here at home in our mother-in-law's house, in our father-in-law's house, or we have this choice to stay here or to go to Krishna. Staying here, we're already here, so there's no surrender. There's no giving up of anything. But Krishna, he's calling us to the forest for rasa dance. Now there's a question of surrender, to give up. And the gopis are the perfect examples of surrender. The acharyas explained that this verse in the 18th chapter of Gita, Sarva Dharman Prityaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja, that this is all about the Braja gopis. This is all about the damsels of Braj. They are all dharmas. Sarva dharman prityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Ham tam sarva papebhyo mokshe shimimasuja. The Braja Gopis, they are the perfect exemplars of this verse of Gita. This is the teaching, Gita, and these are the devotees who show this teaching to the umpteenth degree, that they surrendered everything. So this is the point here. This is one of the most important principles of devotion, 52. Self-surrender in every respect. Because everyone's holding on. So many locks and bonds and coverings and shells. We surround our body with so many upadis. Upadi means designations. I am this, I am that. And we surround our minds with so many conceptions. We reinforce or surround our minds with so many conceptions, which are all basically misconceptions. But so many conceptions, false ideas, false impressions, false aspirations. And then our ego is a composite of all this illusion. And we operate out of that illusory principle called the ego, false ego. So we have lots of opportunities to surrender. Lots of opportunities. Even at the highest level, the gopis have so much love for Krishna, incomparable love and unfathomable dedication to Krishna, but still they're being presented with an opportunity to surrender every night. Krishna plays his flute. Will you go or will you stay? So Krishna is actually calling us all with his flute. Will you come to me or will you stay in the material world? It's like this. So we say, I'm coming. One foot I'm going in your direction and one foot I'm going in the other direction. There's some split. There's a place in Croatia called Split. So people there, they're going one foot one way and one foot the other way. Maybe. I've never been, I can't say. But or you could say maybe they're splitting away from the material world and everybody in Split is going back to Godhead. They're splitting away from Maya. Oh, we live in a place called Split, so we split away. We cut this side, that's Maya, it goes there. We go this side. So that'd be a better way to look at it. I'd like to see that. Yeah, whatever it is, it is. At any rate, every part of the world is the same way. And they even have terms describing personality. Human psychology or human personality is often described split personality. Of course, I don't think anyone can escape this designation. Practically speaking, every conditioned soul is a split personality. There's a spiritual persona, then there's the material desires, the material persona. So there's always a tug of war. There's always a tension, a dynamic tension, which fails to meet most people's attention. Most people aren't aware that there's actually a soul inside the body. So when you become aware of the soul as distinct and different from the body, then there becomes a dynamic tension. There's a dynamic tension. There's a tension created between the eternal soul and the temporary body. But most people don't pay any attention to that tension. But the spiritualist, he's paying close attention to that. And he's trying to extricate himself from the lower nature and trying to realize his higher, pristine, pure, unfettered condition of liberation. So the various pursuits of yoga and meditation are trying to free the bound jiva. May he dance in the light of the spirit. May he fly in the sky of enjoyment, spiritual bliss. Prabhupada called it the spiritual sky. He called Vaikuntha the spiritual sky. Somewhere we see the sky, there's stars and planets, but there's something called spiritual sky. That was Prabhupada's translation of a Sanskrit word, paravyom. We have Vyomasura flying through the sky. Vayu, vyo. Vyom means air, the air demon. So the transcendental air, transcendental space, parav, you must have heard this term, paravyom. This means the spiritual sky. So we can fly over there. This is number 53 out of 64 limbs of devotion, which is called serving those who are associated with Krishna. So this is actually such as, it says, in other words, in Sanskrit it says, tadiyanam sevanam, tadiyanam, connected, tadiyanam samarchanam, sevanam, to do seva to those objects, places, persons, things, plants, trees, animals, that are connected with Krishna. Well, practically speaking, everything, everyone and everything, and every animal is connected with Krishna. But to make it a little bit more manageable, because you can waste a lot of time serving everything and everyone and every object and every animal, Rupa Goswami gets a little specific. Tadiyanam sevanam. Serve those particular objects, people, places that are directly connected with Krishna, because ultimately everything is connected with God. And it's all His energy. It's all His parts and parcels. So serving those objects connected with Krishna, such as Tulsi, Rupa Goswami mentions here. He says, tadiyanam sevanam. Then he specifies, tadiya yastu lasi shastra matura vaishnavarya. So then he starts to list, and these are given as separate principles of devotion. So the 53 is categorical. Number 53 is a category, which is called serving those that are associated with Krishna, such as Tulsi. That's one category, serving Tulsi. So it's interesting. Tadiyanam sevanam. When Rupa Goswami he's going to give a list here of worshipable objects or things in connection with Krishna. So the very first thing he mentions is Tulsi Devi, Brinda Devi. And then, of course, there's other things there. But it shows, by being first in the list, it shows the supremacy or the superiority of Tulsi Seva. Just as there's different kinds of Seva, people can open an anakshetra and distribute grains, or they can do panipio, distribute water. There's different kinds of dan or charity. So that's told in the Shastras that the highest form of charity is giving grains, but then higher form of charity than giving grains, anadan, is jaldan, distributing water. It's much more higher and beneficial form of charity. And you see how difficult it is. It's quite easy to cook up a pot of khichdi and go out on the Parikrama Marg with some leaf cups and pull everybody to the side. Prasad, prasad, prasad. Like we saw on Parikrama the other day. It's very easy, but to organize water distribution, that's a little more difficult, especially on a regular basis. A panipyo, a fixed, established water distribution place. You press the button and the water comes, pure drinking water. It's very rare. So of all these different forms of seva, tadinam sevanam, first is listed Tulsi, because she's so dear to the Lord. Krishna doesn't drink a drop of water or eat a morsel of food without the presence of Tulsi. Tulsi is always hanging around his neck. Tulsi is always on his feet. Tulsi, Charan Tulsi. So much intimate. She's such an intimate servitor. And she has different rupams. She has her form as a plant, but then she has her form as a Sakhi, Vrindadevi. So she's serving the Lord in all different aspects. Because Vrindadevi is, she's like Leela Shakti. She's in charge of the pastimes, arranging all the pastimes, and organizing all the paraphernalia and the forests and everything. So she's so special. So serving the Lord's Tulsi, then 50, that's 53. Then 54 is serving the Shastra, scriptures. Tadiyastu lasi shastra matura vaishnavarya. So serving the Shastra means, of course, this is the next point we're getting to, because higher than anadan is jaldan, and higher than distributing water, the greatest form of charity is called shastradan, vidyadan, to give knowledge. Because if you give knowledge, then a person can figure out how to get water and how to get food. If you just give some unqualified person, you can give an unqualified or uneducated person, you can continually give him free food and water. But if you give him education, give him knowledge, then he can get a job and build a house and dig a well and get his own water, and he can buy grains and cook his own food. He becomes independent, self-reliant, swatantra. So knowledge, vidyadan or shastradan, shastra of course contains the knowledge, shastradan or vidyadan, giving of sacred scriptures, is the highest form of charity. And then the highest form of shastradan or vidyadan is to give paravidya, paravidyadan, to give transcendental knowledge, because you can give vidyadan, knowledge to the foolish or the innocent or the ignorant, and with that knowledge they can manipulate the material energy and find greater happiness, greater success by applying those principles that you taught them or that they learned. But still they're bound. They're still bound in the cycle of birth and death, despite how much material knowledge you have. Someone may have a double PhD, PhD in chemistry and PhD in physics. People like this. So in America they used to say, what does this PhD mean? When we were in university we used to joke like this. PhD means piled. Piled means covered. Piled higher and deeper in nescience, ignorance. You have more ignorance on your head. I didn't work so hard to collect so much ignorance. My head is feeling a little light. I haven't collected so much ignorance. But you're officially recognized because you have a PhD, so therefore you're piled higher and deeper in ignorance. Of course, I'm also endeavoring. I'm trying to get a PhD also. So soon I will join the ranks. So this knowledge, when you receive paravidya, when you distribute transcendental knowledge to someone, that's the greatest and highest form of charity, paravidyadan, or shastradan, because their shastra is paramarthic shastra. There's paramarthic shastra, and then there's lokik shastra. Lokik shastra is shastra or books about this material world. Jyotirved, Ayurved, Dhanurved, all these different tantric literatures and Vedic literatures about the material world. Then there's literature, which is called this paramarthic shastra. And these are the Vedic literatures which describe the mukti marg, path of liberation, how to get free from this material world, Gyan Marg, Bhakti Marg, etc. So if someone gives these type of, distributes these type of books, as it says, serving the Shastra, this is serving the Shastra, to teach this Paravidya or Paramarthic Vidya, or to distribute such books, then you get the greatest benefit. You can read in the Bhagavat Mahatmyam, in Skanda Puran, and also there's a Bhagavat Mahatmyam in Padma Puran. It says, if anyone gives charity of this Bhagavat Puran on a golden pillow on the full moon day of Vajra Mas, which is a month, it's like July, August, September, when Krishna was born, then he gets so much benefit. He becomes eternal resident of Vaikuntha or something. So much benefit just by distributing this Paramarthic Shastra, Srimad Bhagavatam, because this is the Amala Gyanam. This is the Paramahamsa Samhitam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost literature because it's a Rasa Sarup. It's a Rasa Sarup of Radha and Krishna. So there's no greater form of charity than to give the Bhagavat Puran, which is like, is exactly like giving someone Radha and Krishna. And not just some Aishwarya Radha and Krishna, but the Madhurya Mayi Radha and Krishna, the sweet Radha and Krishna of Braj. This is one point. So we can be involved somehow or other with book distribution. Prabhupada is engaging us in what we call book distribution around the world. And what is this book distribution? This means serving the Shastras. What limb of devotion, someone might ask, what limb of devotion is transcendental book distribution? So someone will say, well, it's vandanam, it's offering prayers. Because people read these books and hear the prayers of the great devotees, and maybe they also engage in prayers. Or you can say, book distribution is atmanavedanam, This is, someone might say, what limb of devotion, what anga, bhakti anga, is book distribution? Then someone who doesn't like to distribute books, you can say, this is Atmanivedanam. This requires the greatest surrender. I have to surrender my mind, my ego, my body, my time, my energy, my everything. I have to surrender to go out and deal with these non-devotional class of people and somehow try to impress upon them the need to take this book and read this book and improve their life. So this is the greatest surrender, Atmanivedanam. So book distribution is Atmanivedanam. Yes, you can see it that way. But a more specific, exact way, we can say that transcendental book distribution is the 54th limb of devotion. Number 54. Serving the Shastras. Distributing the Shastras. Speaking on the Shastras. And serving means following the Shastras. That also is meant there. So then, this is number 55. It's called Mathura Seva, serving Mathura. Serving the Holy Dham by writing about the Holy Dham, speaking about the Holy Dham, living in the Holy Dham, serving the residents of the Holy Dham, serving the Brijvasis, serving the living entities. Monkey Seva. Monkey Seva, 5 rupees, chickpeas, chanadal. So that's also a type of service. Give them more enthusiasm so they can steal more things. Give them more chickpeas so they have more power to steal your gumsha and dhotis. fuel their nonsense as seva. So serving the residents of Vrindavan, serving the Holy Dham, glorifying, spreading the glories of the Holy Dham. Nam Mahima, Mathura Mahima. There's a book like that, Mathura Mandala Mahima. The glory, write about the glories of Mathura. This is devotion. This is bhakti. Then number 56 is serving Vaishnavas. Hari Guru Vaishnava. We spoke about that yesterday. Vaishnav Seva. This is also, see, studying the scriptures. Here it says serving Tulsi. Studying the scriptures, living in Mathura. Didn't really say that. Then it says serving the devotees. Somehow they, because it says Tadiya Tulasi Shastra Mathura Vaishnavadaya. So this is called another category of Sevanam, Tadiya Sevanam. Service of things that are connected with Krishna, like beginning with Tulsi and Shastra and Mathura. So service is service. Although one translation says living. It says living in Mathura. That's also service. If we live here with keeping Krishna in mind, then it's service. If we live here and Krishna is not in mind, then it's a disservice. It's a disservice. If Krishna is not in our mind and in our actions, then it's called Dham Aparad. So we have to be careful of that. But otherwise, there's so many opportunities to serve the Holy Dham. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he gives a very interesting description in one book called Sri Chaitanya's Teachings about the Holy Dham. It's a little bit poetical. Dham, Gram, Nam. Right. The Holy Dham, the Gram, and then the Holy Name, Nam. He says if one renders service to the Holy Dham of Vrindavan, Navadvipa Dham, Jagannath Puri Dham, Sam Vishnu Dham, Bhagavan Dham, then by that service the Lord will become pleased. What is a service? Giving some charity to the Brijvasis, or cleaning the Holy Dham, cleaning the holy tanks and rivers and lakes, cleaning Radhakund, sweeping the footpaths, providing resting places for the yatris and for the padayatris. They walk around this Chirasi Kosh on Brajmandal Parikrama, so you provide some temporary shelter for them from the sun and rain and dig wells for them to drink water, and so many types of services can be done in the Holy Dham. Then if one does this, a very interesting thing happens, because the Dham ultimately is personal. The Holy Dham is personal. It's all Krishna's Srup Shakti, Krishna's Swarup, his own form, his own energy. So the Dham is personal, the Dham is Balaram. Holy Dham is Krishna's brother. He provides the area, he provides the setting, the foundation for Krishna to have his Leela by expanding as a Holy Dham. So when we serve the Holy Dham, beautify the Holy Dham, plant gardens, trees, fruit trees and shade trees and clean the footpaths, then Balaram becomes very pleased. Oh, you've rendered service to me in my form as a Holy Dham. He becomes very pleased. And how does he show his gratitude? He shows his gratitude by giving us virakti, which is one of the symptoms of bhava. He helps us become detached from the place of our birth. It's called gram, the village, the gram, where I'm born, where I grew up, all these. And gram means all the upadis that go with it, designation, sarvapadi vinirmuktam, tatpuratvena nirmalam, Rishikesha Rishikenam, Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. So we're born in a particular place, so as soon as we take our birth there, we are, so many designations and titles and concepts are slapped on our forehead. Or you're born in Delhi, and your parents are Punjabi. So you're Punjabi, and you're Indian. These are upadi designations. And then you start to identify, yes, I'm from Delhi. I'm a Bombayite. I'm a Delhiite. I'm from Gurugram. Acha, Gurugram. Oh, yes. And then we may get some ego over that place. That, oh, are you from Delhi? No, I'm not from Delhi. I'm from Greater Kailash. Oh, great. That's different. That's different than Delhi. That is not Delhi. That's Greater Kailash, which is a suburb. It's one area of Delhi. Are you from Delhi? New Delhi? No, I am from Friends Colony. New Friends Colony. Acha. That's a special heavenly planet within. That's a special heavenly planet orbiting within New Delhi. And only very rare devas and devis can enter there. And I can understand that you were one of those Durlabh devis, very rare devis and demigoddesses to reside in that holy, sanctified abode of Swarga, Friends Colony. So all these kind of false ideas and upadis come. So when one serves a dham, then all these things get dissolved. Dham seva, then we serve the dham, Krishna becomes pleased, Balaram becomes pleased, and Balaram is sitting right inside our heart. Balaram is sitting inside of everyone's heart in his expanded form as Shiradakshaya Vishnu. Srinvatam swakata Krishna punya shravana kirtanaha. And from his vantage point, from his proximity and nearness to us all, he says, aha, you've entered the holy dham of Vrindavan, and you're rendering service there. So I feel very happy. I'm going to show my gratitude. I will do you a favor. I will erase all these files from your hard drive. All this lust and anger and all these upadis and all these attachments you have, I will make you think I am not Indian. I am universal. I'm not universal, I'm transcendental. And I will make you start to think I am not man. I am not woman. I am Atma. And I will start to make you think that I really, and the ultimate issue, I am not Indian. I am part of God. Mamayavam Cho Jivaloke. And I'm not Punjabi or Bengali. I have nothing to do with all these things. These are just some paint job on my ego. You come, it's Diwali, so you paint your house yellow this year. Then next year you paint it blue. Then the year after that you paint it green. You see in the village people rotate the colors. They get tired. Oh, last year our house was blue. All right, let's make it yellow. So the village is always changing its viewpoint. The purple house became the yellow house. The yellow house became the green house. So we paint our egos with all these different colors. And then we live through those colors. This color is me, but it's only an external paint job. It falls off eventually. So by Dham Seva, one gets free from attachment to Gram. So Gram is all these personal upadis, but then Gram has an extended meaning. Gram means my village. Gram means my body. Gram means, like we say, Indriya Grami. Indriya Grami. Gram means the collection of senses. The group of senses, Gramai. And Gram means the body, the senses. Gram means the village I'm born in, the Punjab, the Delhi, the New Friends Colony, the India. And Gram also means those related to me, means my family members, beyond me, my wife, my husband, my children, my mother, father. This is all part of Gram. This all comes under the category of Gram. So Dham Seva creates detachment from Gram. And when one becomes detached from all these aspects of Gram, G-R-A-M, Gram, like grandma, Gram, grandma, Gram, when one becomes detached from Gram, then where are you? You're floating in the sky with nowhere to put your feet. There's no solid ground under your feet. You're just like a cotton ball blown by the wind here and there. No solid ground to stand on, no foundation. No hard ground under your feet. So then Krishna says, no, I've pulled the rug out from under you. I've taken away Gram and everything Gram represents. But I'm going to give you something instead. I'm going to give you me. I'm going to give you me because you become Vairagi. You become detached from all these aspects of Gram. You become detached and free from it. But instead of just floating in the sky without any solid relationship or solid sambandha, I will give you myself. And in this age I appear as the Nam. So when we give our attachment to Gram, then Krishna gives us Nam. Then we become attached to Nam. Nam Bhajan, Nam Seva. And we start to formulate and cultivate our identity in relation to Nam. Who is the Nam? Who am I? What is our relationship? What is the goal of this relationship? How do we work in this relationship? It's called Nam Sambandha. What is my Sambandha, relationship with Nam? Well, my relationship with Nam is to serve the Nam, Nam Seva, Kirtan, Japa, meditation. And so this is how the progression works. This Dham Seva gives detachment from Gram. And when we become detached from Gram, and all the aspects of Gram, then we can truly attain attachment for Nam. And when we attain attachment for Nam, then we're leaving this world and we're going to Nam Loka. Nam Loka means the planet where the name resides. Golokera Premadana, Hari Nama Sankirtana. Golokera Premadana is Nam Loka. The Nam comes from there, and the Nam will carry us there. The Nam descends through the airways, transcendental airways, spiritual sky. And it penetrates the covering of this universe, and it crosses over the covering of the universe and enters our ear, the sacred mantra, the holy sound vibration. The sacred mantra enters our ear from the mouth of the preceptor. He is connected there. His wires are connected there. So he speaks the holy name and the holy mantras of the Lord, and we become connected. Goloka comes into our heart through Nam. So we enter the planet of Radha and Krishna, who are personified as the Nam, holy name, by Diksha, by chanting. So then we can go to Nam Loka. Goloka is Nam Loka, the planet of the name. And there the name shows its fullest expression. Here the name may be only showing its syllables. To the gross neophyte, the holy name is only showing syllables. Ha, Re, Krishna, Rama. There's no rupam there. There's no form, sarup. But on the highest level, that same nam is showing the rupam of Radha and Krishna, the gunam, transcendental qualities, and the transcendental leelas. And that's what Goloka is made of. Goloka is made of all the pastimes, form, and qualities of Radha and Krishna. So that's Nam Loka, in its fullest expression, Goloka. Golokera Primadan Harinam Sankirtan. So this is number 55. Serving Mathura. So we'll start with 56 tomorrow. No end, it goes on and on and on.